And all that means is that I've committed to coming alongside them for a couple of years, working with them, supporting their vision, and just seeing what they're doing and going with it. Open Doors have been around for over 60 years, and they work in over 60 countries. They supply Bibles, train church leaders, provide practical support and emergency relief, supporting Christians all around the world who suffer for their faith. In the UK and Ireland specifically, Open Doors works to raise awareness of global persecution, to mobilize prayer, support, and action among Christians, and that's what I've come on board to do. But before I get to that, I just want to first look at this scripture. It's quite a convenient passage for me, talking about Open Doors. I didn't choose it, I didn't have any say in it, but I'm not going to lie that it's quite a good one. Last week, Laura started us off talking about spiritual gifts. And for those of you who weren't here, she basically introduced them as gifts that we are given by God in our person for the common good. And having different gifts in the church is about being united in our diversity. The overall series isn't designed to be a list that you can compare with the person next to you, which gifts you do or don't have, whether that makes you better, more important, more gifted. This series is all about learning the gifts that we have individually and putting them into practice together. You may also remember, these are quite small, so you might not be able to see them, that these are just some of the gifts that Laura touched upon last week. This isn't an exhaustive list. This isn't all of your options. But it was just to highlight that a lot of the gifts that God gives us are actually things that we don't think of as gifts. And this week, the focus is, now that we know that we all have gifts, and those gifts may not necessarily look like what we imagine, what does it look like to put them into practice? How do we use these gifts for ministry? The definition of ministry here isn't necessarily ordained ministry either. It's not the ministry of standing up on a stage and talking to people. It's not the ministry of going around giving communion to people. It's instead the dictionary definition, which is the spiritual work or service of a Christian or a group of Christians. Essentially, that means living out what the church looks like. So what does the church look like? What should the church look like? And literally the first thing that we see in this passage is that Paul is in prison. And the reason he's in prison is because he's a Christian, because he's known for being a Christian. He's being persecuted for his faith, which incidentally is something that he himself did to numerous followers of Christ before his own conversion. He's gone from being someone who would find fault with any Christian and punish them for it, to encouraging everyone to make allowances for each other's faults. This just goes to show that God really can use you no matter what your past, and he does appreciate irony. At this point in the biblical narrative, there's already a lot of unrest, both against and within the church. There's disruption between the Jews and the Gentiles, who are the non-Jews. The Jews have spent their whole lives following God, trying to fulfill all of the Old Testament law to be holy so that when the Messiah comes, they can have eternal life. They're God's chosen people. They're the ones fulfilling all that they've studied their whole lives. And the Gentiles are the outcasts. They're the ones that God didn't want, he doesn't need, he didn't choose. They don't keep themselves holy. They don't deserve a place at this table. But Jesus was a real one for shaking things up, and he came for Jews and Gentiles. Understandably, the Jews are maybe slightly annoyed. On top of this, the Roman Empire is trying to impose its own gods and its own sacrifices and traditions onto the church. And the church is refusing to do that. So the church is being persecuted for that. There was a Roman historian called Tacitus, which wrote about this time, and he said that beside being put to death, they were made to serve as objects of amusement. They were clad in the hides of beasts and torn to death by dogs. Others were crucified, others set on fire to illuminate the night when daylight failed. It's not pretty. So there's disharmony and opposition coming against them from all sides. So Paul is essentially writing to remind them of what Jesus said, to encourage them, to lift them up, to remind them who they're made to be, to stop fighting with each other and instead work together as one. And this is very applicable to us today. Sometimes in the church, not necessarily just in St. James, but the church as a whole, can have similar division and unrest. We place hierarchy on different gifts and on different sins. The person who does the teas and coffees is great and all, but we all aspire to be the person who leads the service or leads the worship. Some people are just more blessed and important than others, right? And sometimes we do this with sins. The person who was once arrested for stealing, who's trying to fundraise for something, can't possibly be using that money for anything good, but it's fine to gossip about them after church. Right? None of these things are true, but somehow it's become ingrained in the culture of church and of society. But that's not how the church was started. That's not how it was supposed to be. That's not how Jesus ever intended it. It's not how we are supposed to live. And I would argue that we're nitpicking sometimes over these things, like they're more important than our one calling to love our neighbor as ourselves and to love God with all of our heart, all of our soul, and all of our mind. And please don't get me wrong, I do include myself in this. I recognize that I can be guilty of seeking after things that I'm not gifted in and comparing myself to others and bringing people down. And that's actually one of the reasons why I decided to work with Open Doors. Not to try and improve my guilt or to seem like a better person, but to move my focus instead on uniting the church as a worldwide family instead of on tearing it down and thinking that any part of it is actually about me. If we are to live worthy of the calling that we've received, we all, myself included, need to step up our game. We need to stop comparing ourselves against other people, and we need to realize that we're all different for a reason. And from the world, there's the opposition of comparison. There's this quote from Theodore Roosevelt that I absolutely love, that comparison is the thief of joy. And a lot of our comparison culture comes from social media, modern advertising, and the rows of self-help books that tell you you're not good enough, that you can be better. It's saturated our world. Everything that we see, we're comparing ourselves with someone else. But the church shouldn't have to and shouldn't actually be that way. We need to stop fighting each other. Instead, let's use our gifts to support and encourage each other over and above ourselves. It's countercultural and it requires bravery. It requires us to be secure in who we are and who God made us to be. It requires us to not be insecure that someone else might be better at a certain thing than us. But you are the best you that there is. No one else can be you better than you. And we need to be secure in that. And when we mature in this way, and we trust Jesus fully with our identities in him, and the fact that we all have different gifts for a reason, the Message version, which I absolutely love for this, says that we will move rhythmically and easily with each other. We'll be efficient and graceful in our response to our calling, fully alive like Christ. Robbie Dawkins spoke quite a lot at New Wine over the summer, and in one of his talks, he was telling a story that he was hosting a family from a country where it's quite difficult to be a Christian. And as they were driving around, she asked him, "Why does the Western church not talk about Jesus more?" And he had to explain that it's because we're afraid. And she asked, "Is that because we're afraid of being arrested or beaten or taken away from our families?" And he said, "No. The Western church doesn't talk about Jesus more because we're afraid of being laughed at." And this really stuck with me. It's actually really impacted me myself because it resonated with me. But am I really more afraid of being laughed at for talking about Jesus than I am of not fulfilling my calling to love and to live fully alive in him? What are you afraid of? What stops you from stepping out? If tomorrow in this country being a Christian was illegal, and you could be beaten, arrested, isolated, your family taken away, would you change your decision to follow Jesus? Would you stop reading your Bible? Would you stop living in love and using your gifts for each other? Or would you live out your purpose anyway, despite any opposition that comes your way? I'd just like to share with you all another video. And in this video, there are stories of Christians facing real persecution. And I hope that you find it encouraging, just on this topic. And afterwards, I'm going to invite Evie to come up and join me.
At university, they discriminate against Christians like me. Professors, they ask us difficult questions to make us feel.
They told us that Christians wouldn't be tolerated in the village. They beat us with sticks. They broke at least 5 or 6 of them on my back, and my sister tried to protect me, but she couldn't.
My bishop was kidnapped in April 2013. My church was destroyed, and my house was bombed. And I lost 2 of my close family members because of the bombings.
When we were in prison, we were all interrogated and questioned. We were beaten harshly. When we were not being interrogated, we were made to kneel from 5 a.m. till 12 p.m. and not speak.
On the night my father was killed, it was raining. We worked the whole day and got home late. That night, people came and stabbed him. I loved him. He loved me. He was my protection.
I visit students in their dorms. I read a Bible with them and pray for them.
I cried out to God, "Thank you, Lord. Jesus, forgive them. They don't know what they're doing." The beating was painful, but inside I felt a tremendous joy. The gospel was just theory for us, but when persecution comes, you know it's for real.
The role of the church is not only having services. We also help non-Christians. They are our neighbours, and we cannot neglect a person who is hungry. When we give them a loaf of bread, the love of Christ is written on it.
In North Korea, my mother taught me only one prayer. I still pray it every day, for my country and for my family. Hananim, Hananim. Lord, Lord, please help.
I was very shocked when my dad was killed. But God comforted us and told us that he would be the father of each of us.
Love that video. It just shows that persecution can look like anything and it could happen anywhere. But God calls us to live our faith no matter what we face. In case you don't know, this is Evie.
Hello.
Evie is one of our youth here and she's been here for how many years?
Quite a while. I don't know exactly.
Quite a while.
A long time.
Evie is really passionate about the persecuted church and about open doors. So when I mentioned that I was talking about open doors and whether she might like to join me, she was very excited.
Yeah.
So Evie, why does the persecuted church matter to you?
It matters to me because when I go to school and I can, you know, I can wear my cross necklace and I can say to people, you know, oh yeah, what did you do on Sunday? Oh, I went to church. And I can openly say that, and the fact that there are people my age all around the world that can't openly say that and that will have a fear of, you know, being beaten or put in prison or worse, it's something that I find completely unjust. And the fact that, and also the fact that I think sometimes that we forget about them in like our daily lives and in the busyness of, you know, what being in the Western world, that we forget that there are people that our like Christian family is struggling so much. And I just feel like that I just want to do everything I can to help them. And I love the fact that Open Doors does all this work and they do such great stuff. So yeah,
that's absolutely amazing. So how can we help here in St. James when we're so far away?
Well, I think there's a lot of stuff you can do. There's so much stuff on the Open Doors website. If you just go to www.opendoors.org, and they have so much stuff to do with prayer, because I find that prayer can be such a powerful thing. And they have so many resources, like I have a map at home, and it's a map of the world, and I've got stickers, and I can move the stickers around to where I'm praying for at the moment. And then these as well, the World Watch List 2018, has got so much information about praying, about what you can do. Also, again this year, I'm going to be doing the Blackout, which is a sponsored fast of, like, online, so I won't be going on social media and I won't be going on my phone for a weekend, and you can either maybe sponsor me for that, but I know I did it last year as well, so you don't have to if you don't want to, and also you can join me in the Blackout as well. I've already got me doing it and my dad says that he's going to do it as well. It's a great opportunity if you want to go and speak about being a Christian in your work. You can go in and say, or you can sponsor me for this and explain why you're doing it. It's a great opportunity, so if you do want to come and join me for that, I have put posters up at the back about details where you can sign up, or you can just come and speak to me after the service and I'll definitely be happy to help you out.
That's great. Thank you so much, Evie. I haven't actually prepared this question, so I'm going to kind of put you on the spot a little bit. But if you could say one thing to encourage us all about why we should get involved with the persecuted church, why we should care, what would you say?
I just think it's what Jesus would do. He loved everyone, you know, in amazing ways, and I feel that is just what he would do.
That's great. Thank you so much, Evie.
That's right.
Give her a round of applause, everyone. Wasn't she lovely?
Thank you.
That's great. So as you can see, it doesn't have to be difficult or scary to get involved and to support our worldwide church family. It could be as simple as supporting Evie financially if you're able to do that and if you would like to. If you can't support her financially but you do want to get involved and you want to talk about it with your work colleagues, you could do it at work. You could turn on your out of office over the weekend. It starts at 7 p.m. on Friday, so you can't really turn it on while you're at work, I'm afraid. It doesn't really work like that. But you could tell your work colleagues why you're going off social media. You can change your profile picture to tell your social media friends why you're not there and how you're trying to raise awareness of the persecuted church to give the people a voice who don't have one. And since we're considering different spiritual gifts, let's consider how some people might respond with their gifts. Maybe you fit more into an evangelist category. You're really passionate about going out and sharing the word of Jesus. So maybe your response to this might be to go out and tell people about Jesus and what he can offer for this world. If that's the case, that's great. Chat to Laura about getting involved with prayer on the streets, or maybe an Alpha course, Or maybe try and set something up at work. I once met someone who tried running a weekly Bible study on a Thursday lunchtime at work, and they were really surprised by actually how many of their colleagues came along just to sometimes argue, find out a bit more, and discuss it in a place where they were able to that didn't impact their day-to-day lives. So you might want to try something like that. Maybe you're more of a teacher and you like sort of guiding people through something and explaining processes. So you might want to talk to your house group leader, or maybe set up a missional community, go for it, where you can tell people about the persecuted church and about what Jesus offers us and why it's worth living our lives for that. Maybe you're more of an apostle, you're more of an advocate, and you'd really like to join in with Open Doors, maybe go on a mission trip to see the world, to tell them about Jesus and to fight for justice. If that's the case, do come and talk to me after the service, and I'd love to help you get involved. And maybe you're more of a pastor, someone who shepherds people, who likes to look after them, to make sure they're cared for. You could perhaps write a letter to the persecuted church. There are ways to do that through the Open Doors website. You can record videos, you can record voice messages that will be broadcast into countries where it's illegal to be a Christian. And you can encourage, you can strengthen those who are fighting for their faith with their lives. But regardless of what your gifts are, regardless of how you might like to respond with your own lives, more than anything, I'd just like to encourage you to pray. Someone, I think this is a story that Laura shared with me actually, someone said the other week, the least I can do is pray, but actually that's the most we can do. Prayer is the most powerful gift that God gave us. It's a direct communication with our Father. So the most that we can possibly do is to pray. You'll see on your seats there are some booklets, there are some bookmarks. In both the booklets and the bookmarks, there's a list of the 50 most persecuted countries in the world. I'd really like to encourage you to take some time to read through these, to read the stories in the booklet, or to look up information about the countries on the bookmarks. Maybe pick one a week or one a day to pray through, however committed you feel. And just pray for the people there who are facing persecution, who are struggling to live their lives the way that God and Jesus calls us to. I'm just going to play one last video. And this video introduces the top five most endangered countries on the World Watch List. The World Watch List being a resource that Open Doors produce each year to show the most persecuted countries. And while you're watching this, I'd just like you to reflect on everything that you've heard this morning and how you might like to respond to it, how you're feeling moved by it, what God's saying to you. And afterwards, the band are going to come up and play a song for us to worship. If during that song you would like to sing as your response, do that. If you would like to sit and reflect, do that. Stand, sit, it is up to you. But please use this time to draw closer to God, to ask him to move you and open your heart to what he is saying.
The right to believe is a fundamental human right. Yet around the world, millions of Christians are denied this freedom. Worse, they are actively persecuted because of their faith. Every year, Open Doors publishes the World Watch List to wake up the world to the 50 countries where Christians face the most extreme persecution. And here are the top five countries on the list. The most dangerous places in the world to be a Christian. Number 5. Pakistan. Christians in Pakistan are facing unprecedented levels of violence. At least 160 Christian buildings were attacked in 2017. Over 700 Christian women and girls were forcibly married. Convert to Christianity from Islam and you bring shame upon your family. Speak up for your faith and you run the risk of being imprisoned for blasphemy. For most Christians in Pakistan, life is lived on the margins. Ostracized, denied education, and restricted to the dirtiest, least regarded occupations. At number 4, Sudan. The government wants Sudan to be a fully Islamic country. Converting from Islam to another religion is punishable by death. The government has arrested or intimidated many Christian leaders. At least 20 churches have been closed, and if you protest, as some brave pastors have done, you are likely to find yourself arrested on trumped-up charges. In the conflict-torn Nuba Mountains, Christians have been indiscriminately targeted by government security forces. Number 3. Somalia. If you are even suspected of being a Christian in Somalia, you could be murdered on the spot. At least 23 suspected converts were killed last year. Christians are not only targeted by violent Islamic militants, but also by their own families and communities, ashamed by what they see as a betrayal of family and clan. So becoming a Christian in Somalia means choosing a life of intimidation, harassment, and even death, which is why Somali Christians keep their faith as secret as possible. Afghanistan is number 2 on the World Watch list. All Afghan Christians are secret believers. If you are discovered to have left Islam, then you could be arrested or beaten up. Your house or business might be destroyed. You might even be killed. Some converts are even classed as insane and sent to psychiatric hospitals. At number 1, for the 17th consecutive year, North Korea. The leaders are worshipped as gods, and Christians are considered enemies of the state. An estimated 50 to 70,000 Christians are imprisoned in brutal labor camps. So to follow Jesus here means risking everything. If you are fortunate enough to have a Bible, you must keep it hidden. You must hide your faith. Don't even tell your children in case they accidentally tell their teachers. And if you are discovered, then not only you, but your whole family will be sent to a labor camp. Around the world, persecution against Christians is becoming more extreme, but the church is growing. In the face of violence and cruelty, in situations of intolerable pressure and hostility, the persecuted church is not merely surviving, it is active and alive. This is our family, and they need our long-term support. For over 60 years, Open Doors has stood shoulder to shoulder with them. Our underground networks smuggle Bibles and literature, offer legal advice, train church leaders and other Christians, and provide vital practical support, such as trauma care and emergency aid. In too many countries, Christians have to keep their faith secret. We don't. Will you share their struggle? Will you wake up the world to the reality of persecution? Because your prayers, your gifts, your voices are needed today more than ever before.